Persigo Press presents the Henry Rios Mysteries podcast. Hello, this is Michael Nava, author of a series of crime novels featuring Henry Rios, a gay Mexican-American criminal defense lawyer, and the producer of this podcast. Today we present Lay Your Sleeping Head, the first novel in the series. Lay Your Sleeping Head opens in the summer of 1982 in the fictional town of Linden, California, 30 miles south of San Francisco. Linden is the home of the prestigious university of the same name, founded in the 19th century by railroad tycoon Grover Linden. Henry Rios is a public defender, born and raised in a small town in California's Central Valley and from a working-class Mexican-American family. He is a graduate of Linden University and its top-ranked law school. In 1982, there is no internet. People smoke in bars and on airplanes. Most gay men are closeted, and no one has heard of AIDS. It's an America where 83% of the people identify as white, 85% as Christian, and 83% say that homosexuality is morally wrong. Ronald Wilson Reagan, who once declared that trees cause more pollution than automobiles, is the president of the United States. In the last episode, Rios's young lover, Hugh Paris, left on a mysterious errand and failed to return. Later, Rios received a call from an attendant at a bathhouse who told him Hugh was discovered overdosed on heroin. In this episode, Rios nurses Hugh through recovery and learns more about his troubled relationship with his wealthy family. Hugh claims his grandfather committed murder to retain control of the family fortune. Rios is doubtful, but tries to keep an open mind because he has begun to envision a future with Hugh.
Hugh lived in a Victorian cottage on a sketchy street deep in Hayes Valley. I stood at the uncurtained window watching the fog lurk in the street, half expecting to hear the howl of the Hound of the Baskervilles. Out of the fog, a man emerged. I couldn't make out much more than his shape, tall and buff. He stopped. Was he watching the house? I saw the bright, brief flare of a match, and then he moved on. He paused to light a cigarette, that was all. But I remained unsettled. He was asleep. At the ER, he swore that night was the first time he'd used in 6 months. As if that was supposed to make me feel better. The fact he'd been clean that long meant his usual fix could have killed him. I found a bottle of brandy in the kitchen, poured myself a glass, and went back to pace the living room. In a bookcase, I found an old copy of The Little Prince, the pages almost in tatters. Beside it was a skinny volume entitled Whirligig, Selected Poems, and the name of the author, Catherine Paris. I opened it, scanned the table of contents, and turned to a poem called The Lost Child. When they cleaned you and gave you to me, long legs and fingers, I shook for 3 days in my knot of hospital sheets. Tears came later, cries, fears, fears holding, the ways you'd shake me off, your well of rage.
You found my mother's book. Let me see it. The lost child. She didn't lose me. She gave me away. Can I have some of that brandy?
Are you all right?
You asked me something like that at the jail when we met. It was a stupid question then, and it's a stupid question now.
I guess that means you're fine. In that case, I'll be on my way.
No, please. I'm sorry. Please don't leave me. Sit down. I didn't mean to snap at you. I'm just so ashamed of myself for using.
What the fuck were you thinking?
I was thinking I was strong enough to do what I had to do. I was wrong.
What did you have to do?
See my dad?
You told me your dad was dead.
He might as well be. He's in an institution, Henry. He's a schizophrenic.
I'm sorry, but why lie to me about it?
Because I'm afraid I might be like him.
Why would you think that?
There's a history of schizophrenia in my family. Sometimes I wonder if some of the things I think I remember aren't just delusions, like my dad's.
Like what?
At one of my rehabs, a shrink told me he didn't think my grandfather had raped me. He said it was, what was the word he used? A confabulation. That when my dad went into the hospital and my mom left me with my grandparents, I was too young to understand what was happening, and I blamed my grandfather and invented the rape. Do you think that's possible? That I made it up?
What do you remember about it?
I remember when he shoved his dick into my mouth. It tasted like piss, and I started to vomit. He pulled my head back and told me if I threw up on him, he'd hurt me. I remember the smell of the cream he used when he fucked me. One of my grandmother's creams. After that, every time I smelled it on her, I felt sick. I remember the next day there was blood on my underwear, and I washed it out so no one would see it. It happened, Henry. I swear it, and not just that one time.
I believe you. Tell me about your dad.
When I was 9 years old, they took him away in a straitjacket. I was terrified. All my mother told me was that he was sick and had to go to the hospital. I already knew something was wrong with him. Half the time he didn't make sense, and he had a bizarre terror of anyone Chinese.
Do you know why?
No one would tell me anything. My family's like that. A bottomless pit of secrets. All that matters to them are appearances. They're all so proper and unfeeling. It was like growing up around statues. Except for my dad. He was warm and alive, and he loved me. He called me his...
Little Prince.
How did you know?
The book on your shelf. You must have looked like the boy in the book when you were a kid. Blonde and blue-eyed. What happened yesterday?
I drove to Napa where they've locked him up. From the outside, the place looks like a southern plantation. You wouldn't know it's a nut house. Appearances, right? Inside, it's just another hospital. Railings along the walls, disinfectant in the air. Reminded me of the jail where we met. Except, it was really, really quiet. Too quiet.
What do you mean?
I've made my rounds of institutions myself. Jails, rehabs, hospitals. They're not quiet places. In that place, you could have heard a pin drop. Then they brought my dad out. He was bloated and lethargic. His hands and face were twitching. I asked the nurse what was wrong with him, and he said it was the side effects of the drugs they had him on. They must have had all the patients drugged into oblivion. That's why it was so quiet.
Did you talk to him?
He didn't know who I was. I tried to jog his memory, but he sat there and stared at me, and there was nothing in his eyes. As long as I thought he was alive somewhere, I didn't feel completely alone. But he's gone, Henry.
You could have told me. I would have gone with you.
I was afraid of what you'd think. You thought I was crazy once, the first time I came to your place, and I was afraid if you knew about my dad.
I don't think you're crazy anymore. You should have taken someone with you.
Who? My grandfather? My uncle, my mother, they're the ones who put him in there.
Wait, your mother is here?
She lives half the year in Boston and half the year out here, teaching at the university. She arrives next week. I haven't seen her since I got out of rehab the last time. I was going to surprise her. Now, I don't know. Part of me wants to run away from my family for good.
I ran away from mine.
And you don't still carry them around with you?
Okay. Point taken. What do you want from them?
I want them to be different people. I want to have a different life.
You can. Starting now. But you can't change them or the past. Hugh, I need to ask you this. The story you told me about your grandfather killing people to get his hands on the family money, is that true?
It doesn't matter. I can't prove any of it. And without proof, who's going to believe me? You don't. No, you don't have to say anything. I didn't mean to drag you into it in the first place.
Do you really think he's out to hurt you?
I don't want to talk about my grandfather anymore. Everything seemed so clear when I left New York. Now, I don't know what's true anymore. God, I'm so tired.
We both are. Let's get some sleep.
You're not leaving?
I'm not going anywhere. The next morning, I found Hugh in the living room in faded red sweatpants, kneeling in a patch of sunlight. His body twisted, forearms on the floor, legs curved over his head. He held the pose for 10 slow breaths before he released it and sat on the floor with his back to me. What was that?
A yoga pose. I started yoga in rehab. It really helped calm me down, but I haven't been keeping up.
That looked pretty advanced for someone who's out of practice.
I was a dancer in college, so yoga wasn't hard for me to pick up.
What college was that? Linden?
God, no. I never wanted to come back here. I could use a cup of coffee. There's a pot in the kitchen. You take yours black, right?
Yeah. Thanks. You were going to tell me about college.
I barely graduated from prep school. Uncle John found a college in New York a couple of hours north of the city that was basically a dumping ground for rich fuck-ups. I drifted through my first semester, but I had this friend, a girl who was a dance major. She thought dancing would get me off drugs and made me sign up for beginning class. It turned out I had some talent for it. Not that I was so great, but there are never enough guy dancers, so I danced. When I wasn't getting high or wandering around Manhattan, I mean.
Did you pursue dance after you graduated?
I dropped out and moved to New York. Got it into my head to audition for the Joffrey Ballet School. They laughed me off the stage. That was the end of dancing.
Wasn't there anything else you wanted to do?
Being an addict turned out to be a full-time job. What about you? Did you always know you wanted to be a lawyer?
I knew pretty early on I wanted to do something to help people. Then it was a matter of deciding the best way to do that. I thought I'd figure it out with the law. Now, I don't know.
I admire you. I never wanted to do anything for anyone. I've wasted so much of my life.
You're 26. Most of your life is ahead of you. Still plenty of time.
To do what?
You'll figure it out.
Will you help me, Henry? Can we figure it out together?
Yes. I'd like that. We two boys.
We two boys? What does that mean?
It's from a Walt Whitman poem. We, two boys forever clinging, one, the other never leaving, up and down the roads, going north and south. I don't remember the rest. I'll find it for you.
Is it a love poem?
Yes.
I've never been in love with anyone before.
Me either. Come back to bed.
Them that's got shall have, them that's not shall lose. So the Bible says, and it still is news.
What are you singing?
An old Billie Holiday tune.
Don't stop.
Mama may have, and Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own.
You have a beautiful voice.
Thanks. I love Billie. She's the queen of junkies.
That why you have a poster of her above your desk?
You noticed.
Yeah. And I noticed the desk, too. It looks like it should be in a museum.
It's a Biedermeier cylinder top bureau desk. Early 19th century. Probably made in Hamburg.
I'm impressed.
Don't be. I only know that because it's what my Uncle John told me when he unloaded it on me. Are you coming back to bed?
Yeah. The desk is from your uncle?
He collects antiques, and he's been at it so long, there's no more room in his house. And most of his collection is in a warehouse down in South City. He wanted to furnish this place for me, but I don't want to live in a mausoleum like he does, so I politely declined, except for the desk. I took it so I wouldn't hurt his feelings.
Sounds like you're pretty close to him. Does he have kids of his own?
He never married. I shouldn't say anything. He belongs to a different generation that didn't discuss private matters.
Now you have to tell me.
My great uncle is an elderly bachelor who collects antiques. Draw your own conclusions. Can I ask you a legal question?
Shoot.
What does it mean when a document's been sealed in a court case?
Well, generally, papers filed in a lawsuit are public documents and anyone can go and look at them. But if a document's been sealed, it means you have to get permission from a judge to look at it. Why?
Last night, you asked me if what I told you about my grandfather being a murderer is true. I believe it is, Henry. I've been gathering evidence, but some of it is sealed.
What made you think of that now?
It's all in the desk. The evidence, I mean.
What kind of evidence do you have?
Whatever I could find. Police reports, my grandmother's will, stuff like that.
Have you shown it to anyone?
No, but I told my uncle about it.
What did he say?
He told me the day his sister and nephew were killed was one of the worst days of his life, but that it was an accident and I should leave it alone.
How did they die?
In a car crash.
Was your grandfather in the car?
No, he was at home. My Uncle Jeremy, my dad's brother, was driving my grandmother to Reno to file for a divorce.
So how was this murder?
A witness told the police that someone forced them off the road.
Did the police investigate his story?
I don't know.
Do you want me to look at your evidence and give you my opinion?
I'm afraid to show it to you.
Why?
Because if you tell me there's nothing to it, I'm not sure I could drop it, and then you really would think I'm crazy.
Okay, let's take it one step at a time, okay? I'll look it over, and then we can talk.
Okay, but not now. Not today. I'm famished. How about some food?
As long as we order in.
Sure. There's a pizza place around the corner that delivers. Henry?
What is it, baby?
I'm not crazy. He murdered them.
You've been listening to Lay Your Sleeping Head, a Henry Rios mystery. If you enjoyed this podcast, please spread the word on social media. We depend upon your support to keep this series going. For updates and behind-the-scene extras, visit us at our Facebook page, The Henry Rios Mysteries, or at michaelnavawriter.com under the podcast tab. We'd also love to hear from you. Message us on Facebook or email us at persigopress@gmail.com. That's persigopress@gmail.com. This is an abridged version of the novel, Lay Your Sleeping Head. You can buy the complete novel at Amazon. For this episode, our cast was Armando Rey as Henry Rios and Cameron LaBrie as Hugh Paris. Our director is Russell Kaltschmidt. Our sound engineer is Dave Peck. Music and sound effects were composed by Josh DeRosa. This episode was written and produced by Michael Nava.